When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey humans, want to optimize your cardiovascular health with real data? Sifox Health offers the easiest, most affordable blood biomarker testing kits. Test 17 key biomarkers like cholesterol, ApoB, and hemoglobin A1C from the comfort of your own home and get results at your fingertips in just a few days. Get 20% off at sifoxhealth.com/yami. Know your biomarkers and live healthier.
Even without diabetes, right? Like no one wants to feel that way. No one wants to find out who they are and then feel like blocked because they've got this disease that prevents them from really expressing or exploring who they are. I think that comes up in type 1. And I hate to see these kinds of barriers because the way I view type 1 diabetes today is that it can be the reason you become the healthiest person that you've ever been.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Welcome, humans, to another episode of I Am Human. I am so happy to be here with you today. Thank you so much for joining. Please subscribe, rate and review, and share this episode. I appreciate it so much. To be human means that we may struggle with the diagnosis of an incurable chronic condition, but it also means that we might take that diagnosis and use it as motivation to build the healthiest and happiest version of ourselves. Humans are truly amazing. And my guest today is definitely an amazing human. Lauren Plunkett, RDN, LDCD, CES, is a registered dietitian and certified diabetes care and education specialist with over 30 years of personal experience living with type 1 diabetes. Her professional experience includes pediatric endocrinology, performance nutrition, and diabetes health coaching with expert knowledge in continuous glucose monitoring. In addition to her clinical experience, she serves as a writer, spokesperson, public speaker, indoor cycling instructor, and authored the award-winning book, Type 1 Determination. A cornerstone of Lauren's outspoken work is educating individuals on the benefits of plant-based nutrition for preventing and improving chronic conditions. She is also one of the hosts of Green Glow, a segment of the acclaimed Mastering Diabetes podcast. You can learn more about working with her at www.laurenplunkett.com. And in this episode, we really have a fantastic conversation. Lauren is just so candid about her experience, and she's so passionate about being a patient advocate. And I got to hear her and see her speak at the Plant-Based Prevention of Disease Conference. And let me tell you, she is on fire and she is very passionate. And she cares so much about how in healthcare we perceive and address people with type 1 diabetes so that we can help empower them and not label them by their condition. So we talk about her personal journey. We talk about what people that are newly diagnosed with type 1 diabetes struggle with. We talk about how she discovered plant-based nutrition, how it impacted her health and her diabetes. We talk about why it is that whole plant foods actually benefit people that have diabetes. And we talk about what recommendations she has for people that have type 1 diabetes that want to transition to a plant-based diet. We also talk about how she started spinning, and we talk a lot about how she loves it, and the wrap-up questions, her answers are really, truly fantastic. So you're going to love this episode. If you are somebody who has a diagnosis of diabetes, whether it's type 1, type 2, or a different type of diabetes, I think you're going to really appreciate this episode. And I think this episode is especially great for people that are considering transitioning to a plant-based diet, and maybe you're afraid to. I think Lauren really helps give you some really good tips about that. So thank you so much for being here today. Again, I really appreciate it. I hope you love this episode. And now let us welcome Lauren Plunkett. The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional. Lauren Plunkett, welcome to I Am Human. What a pleasure to have you here virtually, but thankfully we got to meet in person. Actually, we got to be roomies in an actual college dorm. That was quite an experience, wasn't it?
Yes, we did. And I think what's even funnier about that is that we never even really saw each other.
Yeah, I knew that there was somebody there, but I didn't want to like disturb you. And, you know, I figured you're doing your own thing. But you know what's funny? I don't know if I told you this already, but I loved college. I loved college. And that's where I met my college sweetheart. We're still married. And I always fantasized about going back and being in the dorms and having that whole experience. Well, our experience cured my fantasy because I realized how convenient and pleasant it is to be a fully grown adult that can afford like a real mattress.
Yes.
And things like that. Like, I think we remember things like when we were in college, we didn't care, right? We're like, oh, things are, you know, lumpy or whatever. Who cares? You're just having the time of your life. And then when you're a spoiled adult and you're used to like all the pleasantries of life, you go back and you're like, oh, wow, I don't necessarily want to do this again.
I didn't have the traditional college experience. I went to an art school, which was in a past life. And then when I went into dietetics, I was old enough to have an apartment and do all the things. And nice. My goal was get in, get my degree, and get back in the real world as soon as possible. So this was an awakening for me. And what I was so amazed about was how many doors it took to get to my room. Like, the security was serious. Those doors were heavy. We had two keys to get in, a security key. Like, I forgot the key in the room when I went down to the gym the next day, and the guys at the desk, they pretty much took my blood type to give me permission to like get back into that room. So we were very secure, but boy, that pillow was sad. That was the saddest pillow I think I could ever ask for, but I'd do it again. I would do it again. Yeah. I adapted. I think that's the thing about it. We adapted and we weren't too big.
It's true. We will adapt. That's what's awesome about humans, which we'll talk about more later.
For sure.
All right, Lauren. Well, you're here to talk about diabetes, which I'm so thankful about. So tell us a little bit about your personal journey with diabetes. At what age were you diagnosed with type 1 diabetes? And how long did it take you to get to the point where you felt like you actually understood what the heck was going on with your body, what was going on inside your body, and that you were managing it?
Well, the part of your question I'm going to latch on to is the little bit. I'll give you just a taste in this first question because I was 11. And listeners can think back to 11. What were you thinking about? What were your priorities? I want to make friends and be cool, or I want to like play sports and kickball and be awesome this year and prepare for middle school or whatever it might be. And I was being diagnosed with an incurable disease at 11 years old and then having to learn how to live an entirely different life. And entirely different, maybe that's not true, but this newness that came into my life with my parents shifted everything because of the priority. How do we keep our child alive was really what my parents did. And I was very fortunate to have great parents that said to themselves, well, let's learn what we need to keep going here. Let's go home. Let's do what we have to do to keep her going and teach her responsibility. And they really embraced this big thing that was happening in our lives together. Unfortunately, not every kid gets that. And I did. And I also have a dad who's so great at being a teacher. And he was like, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed, kiddo. You know, we're going to continue to be you, and you're going to continue with the lessons that I always planned on teaching you. And we're going to go forth and conquer. You know, that was always like the attitude. Then moving into what I call the teenage apocalypse, that's then when things start to get interesting when it comes to diabetes. What do you think about when you're 13 and 14 as, you know, a girl growing into this time and space other than hormonal apocalypse? Like, so many things are changing. And what I'm doing at this point in time is just trying to figure out how not to accidentally kill myself with insulin. My priorities were so different, or in addition to all the things that you're doing to be human as a teenage girl, you also have this thing looming. And now looking back, I realize that there was a lot of traumatic thinking, damaging thinking around that personal struggle that you have to keep in because you feel like you're going to be judged like about everything. People seeing you take shots in public or treating a low blood sugar in public. Why am I drinking a juice box between classes? You know, stuff like that where you get into your own head. Really, really, really in my own head. So, like, how long did it take me to get to the point where I felt like I understood it? I'm still trying to understand it, right? Like, type 1 diabetes is, there's so much evolution with type 1 diabetes. When I knew that something had to change, that was right after high school. That was a couple of years of being independent, because if there's anything diabetes teaches you, it's how to be independent. It's how to grow up real quick. And I'm fortunate for that, how to make good enough decisions that you get yourself out of stuff that might turn out to not be so great. At least that was something that I was able to do. And I hit a fork in the road. It was like, either I'm going to get healthier or I'm not. And I chose to go down the healthier pathway, but it took a while, really, really took a while to get there. So confidence is challenging. I think that's something that I'll always have a little bit of a struggle with. There are so many days where, just in general, having type 1 diabetes, it's hard to be in our body, and it's really hard to be in our head, because that's where we go when things aren't great. And like, I had learned over time that the word you never use to describe diabetes is perfect. And we really shouldn't be using that word, I think, in a human description kind of a way, because it's like the way you describe a landscape, the way you would describe beauty, I think, is where perfection is. But as humans, we are just not. That's not the goal for humans, you know, to be doing that. So in type 1, you're always adapting. You're always trying to learn. And so getting to the point where I feel like I understood it, probably when I actually could tell myself something was wrong. Something was wrong with what I learned. Something was wrong with my upbringing in the clinic. I was brought up in the healthcare system. I was brought up as this clinical kid. When I realized that not everything I had learned was working is when life got different.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you were saying, what were you doing at 11? I think I was literally still playing with dolls at 11. Like, it took me a while to mature. So yeah, I was not in any way capable of being fully responsible for something like that when I was 11. So yeah, you had to do some really quick growing up with that diagnosis for sure. I'm a pediatrician, so I absolutely have patients that are diagnosed at varying ages. What do you think newly diagnosed people, young people with type 1 diabetes, struggle with as they develop an understanding of their diabetes and they learn to navigate the medical systems, they learn to tune into their own bodies? What are the things that you're seeing?
Something that really gets into our heads is that we're diabetic first and people second. And that's for anyone with diabetes, right? Like, at any age of being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes or living in fear of even developing it because maybe your family has really got quite a bit of diabetes in it, type 2 or type 1, that if you find out your glucose is starting to elevate and you have a dose of fear coming into your body, it's almost like it just sets you up for that diagnosis to happen. So feeling less than, even without diabetes, right? Like, no one wants to feel that way. No one wants to find out who they are and then feel like blocked because they've got this disease that prevents them from really expressing or exploring who they are. I think that comes up in type 1. I hate to see these kinds of barriers, because the way I view type 1 diabetes today is that it can be the reason you become the healthiest person that you've ever been. ever, no matter how you're diagnosed with it, because of what it can teach you. But I was very emotional about it, and I still can be. And what came with my diagnosis was anger. I was really angry, not like because I got diabetes. I knew like I had this responsibility. If I want to keep ticking, I got to take the insulin. I got to keep going. But there are such high rates of disordered eating in type 1, 40% for females. I think it's higher, quite honestly, based on who I work with and how I evaluate that. And men can also develop eating disorders who have type 1 diabetes. But it also depends on how we're defining what a disordered eating habit is. I knew how to read a label when I was 11. I knew how to be very discerning and scrutinizing of carbohydrates when I was just a kid. And I also started to learn how to create this kind of ugly position between cause and effect. This is something young people really struggle with, is that they start to find out that, gosh, I have to take insulin for the carbs. So insulin is bad. That means carbs are bad. And that's a problem that gets perpetuated in the clinic, because insulin isn't bad. It's necessary. We get stronger and smarter because of insulin. We get stronger and smarter because of carbohydrates. And the other struggle there is that carbohydrates are never just a carb. Carbohydrates have all the vitamins, all the minerals. They also have protein in them. They can also have fats, but usually we call nuts, seeds, and avocado fats first, but then we find out they have some carbohydrate in them. So carbohydrate is never just a carb. There's so much going on in the developing mind of a child that they have to then work through this, work through these things, that complication. And then, of course, you know, like teenage priorities that turn into the priorities of someone who's just entered college and meets friends and wants to party. And, you know, like there's so many things there where you're trying to work with diabetes, but be you. And that's where feeling like, I'm going to quote, because I never use the word diabetic to address someone, but unquote, diabetic first and a human being second, that shouldn't be happening. And that's a problem in the clinic, because if we have endocrinologists saying to a 15-year-old girl, that where I see myself in every 15-year-old girl with type 1, you're a diabetic, you start to lose your identity, or your development of your identity can change with, it sounds like an accusation to call somebody diabetic versus saying, you know, hey, Jenny, you have type 1 diabetes and we're really going to learn how to own this. We're really going to learn how to work with this and we're going to accelerate. Do you play sports? What are your goals? What do you want to do? Are you into clubs and do you play an instrument? You know, we're trying to find out who that person is, and that really helps someone develop their strengths around diabetes versus making these accusations. So of course, you know, with you being a pediatrician, oh my gosh, we could go on, you know, about these types of struggles that can then domino. But the positive mindset, you can never be too young to practice some of those skill sets around thinking positively. I mean, like there are kids learning breath work in elementary school. You know, I love that. I wish I had some opportunities like that when I was a kid.
Yeah. And I think you're so right. When it becomes an identity, I think we know that for people that live with chronic conditions, it can influence your mental health, lead to anxiety, depression, you know, those kinds of things. So I'm glad you're giving us that perspective as well, because I think what happens with parents and medical providers is we want to keep somebody safe, right? And so we think sometimes the best way to do that is by inciting fear. Like, you have this condition. If you don't take care of yourself, these bad things will happen. But for someone that's living with that condition, and I, you know, read in your book, it's like, that's all you got told. Like, even when you had it for like 15 years or something, someone was like, oh, did you know that, you know, you could have, and the worst thing that could happen is when you have these big changes in your spikes and lows, and you're like, I cannot believe you're lecturing me. Like, you know, that's gotta be really tough to always be in that position where people are lecturing you and you're just telling you all the bad things that could happen to you.
Thank you for reading my book.
Yeah, no, it's a great book.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, you can imagine why, well, we'll get to it, but why I became an indoor cycling instructor to deal with moments like that in a healthy way.
Seriously. Punching people is not, you know, seen as socially acceptable, so.
Gosh darn it.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about how you discovered plant-based nutrition, how that happened. I do want a little bit, if you have a little bit more background on, because in your book, it was like you decided to adopt vegetarianism, but what led to that? Was there somebody else that inspired you? Did you read about it? Was it ethical stuff? What happened there?
I love how you just described that it was a discovery, because it was like, in some ways, for me in my life, like discovering the ark or something. You know, you can't even explain what happens when you find something that works in the way that it did for me. So again, going back to that fork in the road, it had developed over a couple of years, really, of me realizing like I've got to do something different, because the biggest thing in diabetes is realizing that if something's not working, it may not be you. It's the advice that you've been given for years and years and years. I'd had type 1 for 15 years before I went plant-based. I am now approaching my 31st year of having type 1. So half of my existence with type 1 diabetes was in frustration, confusion, and unhealthiness. So I remember the last burger I ever ate. I remember who I was with. I remember where I was. And I just decided, I'm going to stop eating meat. I just am. I feel like I like my animals better alive. So there was some ethics there. And I think in description of what I was actually feeling now that I'm a dietitian and kind of in hindsight of what this was, is it was it associating what food actually is. I thought chickens made chicken when I was a kid. There wasn't an association. It's kind of this awakening of I should probably know where food comes from, because I've been taught how to learn things about food to keep myself alive, but I'm not doing so hot. So let me just gravitate towards some things that are healthy for everyone, like more greens. That makes sense. And I grew up in a household where my mom cooked. I mean, the privilege of having this at home is that I had that traditional meat, potatoes, veggie. That was there. So I already knew. And also the training and the food pyramid was thrown at me as a kid. So I learned food groups. I learned all of this stuff. I knew vegetables were necessary. Fruit wasn't so much on my plate, but my mom put it on the dinner table. I really lost touch with this after I moved away from home after high school. So you can imagine, you're choosing your own foods to eat. I didn't have any cooking skills. I mean, kind of just barely surviving. But a few years that had gone by, I had since come back home and was preparing to go back to school and trying to decide if I actually thought that being a dietitian was the smart thing to do. As I started to eat more greens, it was more about addition than subtraction at that point. I had already made the decision, I'm just going to stop eating meat and see what happens, because that's definitely what I've been told to do in the past. And I don't really feel great eating it. I don't know if it's going to affect my diabetes or not, but let's just give it a go. What accidentally happens when you eat less meat is that you got to eat more of something else. And the more that I chose were just more greens, more veggies, more of the things that I knew would just be healthier. And on accident, because I couldn't explain it at the time, I just seemed to need less insulin. Had no idea why. And within a couple of months of this, I think I had probably added a bit more in food. Like I started to trust grains a little bit more. I started to trust beans a little bit more. I was eating, I wasn't choosing sugar for breakfast, and I wasn't choosing cereals, and I wasn't choosing milk. Actually, I had realized at some point that I had really decreased my dairy intake too. It just felt right to just, I don't really like the milk anyways. And cheese has really got a lot of like kind of grease and oil in it. And I just kept thinking, is that good inside my body? Because I'm not too sure about this. So that was the beginning. And the enforcement, I mean, complete reinforcement of this experiment was that I went to my endocrinologist after a couple months, 3-4 months. And I was like, I'm having low blood sugar like crazy. I have decreased my medications to the point where I'm comfortable. And she's like, We got to pull it back more. This is major. And I go, what's happening to me? Am I a study of one? I'm eating all these plants. I'm not eating meat anymore. And I am like winning diabetes. And that was the initial like, what the hell? And then I stuck with it. So I stuck with it and decided, I mean, I was really having an epiphany here. I was really like, now that I know I was entering into this new life that has become what I am today on my resume. And it's really kind of a spiritual moment for me to look back and like realize like I listened to my intuition. I listened to my body and I knew what was working or what I was told was supposed to work was not working. So I go in the complete opposite direction and go, hey, carbs, be my friend. But I also knew that the beans and the grains and the fruits and the veggies were healthy. So that was intro. So when I decide to go back to school to become a dietitian, I go to this conference in the first semester And this gal sits down next to me, who happens to be a diabetes educator and a dietitian. And I thought she was going to lecture me about like the food that was on my plate. Like I had falafel on my plate and hummus. And like, I was like baba ganoush and all this like bunch of carbohydrate Mediterranean foods. It's gorgeous. And I kind of gave her some attitude. And she says to me, "I know why you're insulin sensitive." And I mean, these were already words I was like not quite familiar with, but I knew I needed to learn. And she's like, "It's the fiber." I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, tell me more." And I couldn't get enough of her. And over time here, she just threw tons of studies at me, like Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, just get into it. That was where plant-based started to then meet. Here's where some morals and ethics were meeting my past education. Now I'm starting to enter into a new education and I'm going, wait a minute, how old is this research? How long has this been around? Some of this research is older than me? What? Fiber's like a thing. And that's when the anger set in. That's when it set in. But that's also when I was like, plant-based for life. I'm there. I'm in.
I love that story. You know, and I think you're right. I think sometimes it's hard to explain how things come into our minds. I really do think that sometimes it is divine intervention. Like it's put in there and you're like, okay, let me try this and see what happens. So I love that you took off for it in your experience. You wanted to experiment and just find out what happened. And as you got into it, you realized you felt good. And by this time you were already doing spinning as well, right?
That year when I had met my mentor, Susie, that year was another like layer in this whole change that I had because I felt more energy. That was what so many people can describe when they go plant-based is they don't know what they're missing until you start getting higher quality nutritional range of foods that you're digesting. What you also don't know is that there's such a profound improvement in your digestion and the way that you're absorbing those foods. There's already some digestive impairment, mitochondrial impairment with type 1 diabetes. I didn't know any of this stuff existed. What is there that could be better for your gut health, for your quality of your digestive lining in your stomach, even for your absorption rate of vitamins and minerals, for anti-inflammatory properties, and for your immunity? There's nothing better than eating more plants. These high fiber, short chain fatty acids just turn into pure power. I had no idea that was what I was lacking because I was so used to feeling like crap for most of my life. So if people can imagine, yeah, there are days I feel like crap and I wish I could just turn on the feel good switch. This happened to me, this switch, and I didn't know I had the switch. I didn't know I had power to have this switch. And it wasn't about taking less insulin because I ended up taking a lot less insulin because I was becoming more insulin sensitive. And I like to describe this as just physical efficiency. Became so efficient at using food for energy that I needed to do something with it. So I go to the university gym and I'm like, I'm going to do this. I'm taking a spin class. I like the music. I want to go do it. I wanted to go do the damn thing. You know, that was totally how I felt. Like I've got power at this point. And I love that. I love that feeling of the empowerment to like do. And I went and I was like super sore immediately. I was like, oh, this is going to get me. And I loved it. It was like the dopamine of all time. But I also thought, I could teach this and I have better musical taste. Oh, and that's something we found out as roomies is you were playing music and I thought it was my phone was on and it was
your music. Similar tastes. The EDM lifestyle.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You were bumping at like 7 a.m. And yeah, that was what got me started. And I think I needed to find something I loved for physical exercise because my life so far, exercise had been something to do when my blood sugar was high. It had kind of been a means of punishment. There were just so many things about exercise that I didn't understand the function of how just walking would be good for me. Although I had lived in Florida for a few years. That's where I ran off to after growing up in Minnesota and I needed to thaw out. So I ran go off to Florida after I graduated high school. And I loved walking on the beach. But I realized now there was this euphoria to just being somewhere else, to breathe in the air, to see, you know, feet in the sand, like that groundingness. And that's kind of what exercise has done for me now. And I've been teaching cycling for like 14 winters now. So it was part of that year that changed my life. And then I started teaching. And now I teach 3 or 4 classes throughout the winter every week.
My goodness. That's amazing. I mean, it seems like such a big extreme because it seems like there were times you really did not feel good at all. Like you were not feeling good. So going from that, like not feeling good most of the time to suddenly feeling good in your body and getting the endorphins from the exercise and figuring that out too, because that was a journey in itself as well. Just like figuring out, okay, how do I adjust my insulin and make sure I don't get too low and all of these things. And you finally figured that out. So that must have felt really empowering as well, because it seems like you didn't have any role models that showed you, hey, people with type 1 diabetes can be athletes. They can, you know, do this at a level that's even elite. And you didn't have those examples growing up. So tell me about that change of like a lot of times not feeling good to like suddenly having all this energy and teaching spin classes.
I actually found out that there were high-level amateur cyclists with type 1 diabetes. And I was like, no. You know, maybe we can be weightlifters. Maybe we can do something in a, you know, in a closed space. We can make power. But long-distance endurance, yeah, ha. And sure enough, oh, yeah. You know, this was before Instagram can, you can find plant-based athletes. You can find athletes with type 1 doing all kinds of awesome things and challenging that existence that so many people view as just too hard to do any of these great things that people aspire or dream to. And we all have very different experiences with type 1. We really do. I could meet someone in the same clinic that I was diagnosed in who had a different experience than I did. But it, you know, that's how we are as individuals. Everybody's got to kind of walk their own line. And when I found out that this could be done is when I got back on my bike. And it was so fun to goof around. I went to my parents' house and goofed around on the bike that I'd had since I was like 14. And it was just so fun to do this. I was like 26 years old, just bouncing around on this bike. And I'm like, what am I doing? This is freedom. This is great. This is what I remember, you know, childhood. Like you get a car and you forget how awesome your bike is, you know. But that was part of the confidence build that I really needed. It was in the absence of confidence is what stops us from being as great as we could be. That absence of confidence. And confidence doesn't necessarily turn on the next day, not at all. But finding something you love is key. And if it has to do with physical exercise, that's where I knew this love can happen. But what was looming was, how am I going to teach an hour-long class without going low? How am I going to figure this out? And I wasn't wearing a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor. It was finger stick. It was injection. It was timing. And I was at the gym and I was on a spin bike and I was the only one in the studio and I had a plan and I just focused on 20 minutes at a time. What's my starting glucose? And if I go low, I'm going to have to make an adjustment. So it was just, it was kind of this, it was experiment with a soft plan and learn how to make the adjustment. And I didn't have a whole lot of research on exercise and type 1 diabetes at that time. Now we have some awesome research. But what I was doing essentially, and it's something I teach today, is developing my own exercise protocol. Realizing here's point A to point B. What does it take to get there? What's my timing like? And that's how endurance athletes have to operate. But what I was doing was I'm thinking like I have to think in a strategic way because I have got to manually be the beta cell, but I need to feed myself like an athlete. And that was a profound realization is that we're athletes first who happen to have diabetes. It is a partnership. You are not feeding the diabetes and happening and trying to run the marathon. You are the athlete. We've got to feed you like the athlete and diabetes is the partnership. We've got to, they're two things on the same coin. They're not completely separate. And that separate thinking is what stops people from diabetes from being great. Is they will decide I am diabetic first and everything else is too hard. We have to be able to find this space. And I did. And you get better with practice. You start to understand how to do things in the morning. Simplify, not overcomplicate or overthink. And also not to shoot yourself in the foot. Self-sabotage is also part of life with type 1 because like you said, we don't feel good when our blood sugars are fluctuating like by a lot. Highs to lows, over-treating with either food or insulin. This kind of reactive lifestyle of over-treating is what leads us to not feel well. So we have to shrink those reactive moments, decrease them. And that was what exercise did for me. Exercise plus high fiber nutrition helped to give me less variables. decreased the variables. I knew cause and effect better, and I could see the patterns more clearly. And now that I've been on a continuous glucose monitor for 8 years, the minute I got my hands on one of those is when I became more confident and braver with how long I could be out. Like I can go for a couple hour hike or something and feel safe. And the safety was big for me.
It's amazing technology to have that resource now.
September 29th is World Heart Day to raise awareness of the number one global cause of death, cardiovascular disease. We know that two critical risk factors for the development of cardiovascular disease are high cholesterol and diabetes. But so many people are living with high cholesterol and elevated blood sugars without a clue. If you want to live a longer, healthier life, it is essential to know your numbers so that you can take control of your health and make changes as needed. But we all know that getting labs is not an easy task. First, you have to see your doctor. Then they have to order the labs. Then you go to the lab and hope they can draw your blood without too much pain. And then wait for results. Once you have the results, you may not even know what they mean. What if there was a better way? SciFox Health has pioneered a novel approach to create the most comprehensive, most convenient, and least expensive at-home blood test on the market. They are the easiest, most affordable way to check your blood biomarkers. They give you the ability to test 17 critical blood biomarkers in a single at-home kit. It's easy to use and offered at an incredibly low price. It's clinically accurate, and you don't need a doctor's order to obtain it. If you want to decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease, there are several key biomarkers that can give you a picture of your cardiovascular and metabolic health. The SciFox Health Kit includes total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, ApoB, apolipoprotein A1, and hemoglobin A1C. ApoB is now being recognized as an important indicator of cardiovascular health, and most people have never had this blood test measured. SciFox Health reports are not just raw data. The team at SciFox create a unique scoring system called the Axes of Wellness that spans different health and lifestyle categories, such as inflammation, metabolic, and cardiovascular health. With this, they take the guesswork out of interpreting your results and empower you with actionable insights to improve your wellness. You can view your results in your secure dashboard, which includes personalized recommendations. It's very easy and convenient. Your kit is mailed directly to your home. Then you open your kit and simply follow the instructions. You supply just a few drops of blood and mail it back in a prepaid envelope. And incredibly, you get your results in a few days. It really is that simple. You don't need to drive anywhere or call the doctor's office repeatedly to get results. It's affordable and you have actionable data at your fingertips. Before I completed my first SciFox Health Kit, I had never had my ApoB measured, and I was so glad to have this piece of data about my cardiovascular health. SciFox Health is the easiest, most affordable way to routinely check your blood biomarkers and stay on top of your health. I'm so excited to be working with SciFox Health. Visit scifoxhealth.com/yami to get 20% off to test your blood at home and begin working toward a healthier you. That's scifoxhealth.com/yami. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Renting from Armoire is perfect for me because I love fashion, I get bored easily, I love to try new things with low commitment, and I'm also a minimalist who is budget conscious. Clothing rental just makes sense. It's so fun. You get to try new styles that you may not be brave enough to buy and keep forever, and your wardrobe stays fresh and updated. We live in a small old house with tiny closets that get cluttered easily. But I love clothes. I don't want to compromise. I want to look cute and feel great. And with clothing rental, it's a win-win. My first shipment of rental items arrived quickly, and all my items were neatly folded, clean, and ready to wear. The first item I tried on was a pair of overalls from Wild Fang, and I've already worn them 3 times because they're adorable and so soft and comfy. Today, I'm wearing a beautiful floral linen wrap dress from Yumi Kim, and I feel so feminine. It's really elevated my mood. I have four more items to try this week, including some cute corduroy wide leg ankle pants, a pair of super wide leg jeans, a sophisticated midi dress, and a puffy sleeve V-neck sweater. Getting dressed in the morning is exciting, and I feel great all day. There are so many reasons to try Armoire. First and foremost, you'll always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's affordable. They have many plans to choose from, depending on how often you'd like to swap out your outfits, but it could actually save you money in the long run. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, letting it sit in your closet for years until you finally donate it. It also feels good to support a company that is women-founded and women-led. And finally, Armoire can help you define your personal style. It gives you recommendations based on your body type and what you already like, but it also gives you the freedom to explore different styles you may not otherwise buy. If you've never tried something like this before but feel intrigued, I recommend that you give it a try. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/Dr. Yami. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/DRYAMI to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, well, you know, you've talked about fiber, which is also my favorite F word, by the way. So I feel that still there is a separation between type 2 and type 1 diabetes. And I feel like it's becoming more accepted in society to try a whole food plant-based diet for type 2 diabetes. I feel like it's making sense to a lot more people, but I still feel in my patients, because I don't directly manage my patients that have type 1 diabetes, thank goodness they have their dietitians and they have the endocrinologists and they have great teams at the children's hospitals, which is so grateful for. But I feel like in the type 1 diabetes community, there's still this like, a carb is a carb is a carb. And when you're eating plant-based, it's too many carbs and that's not the right way for us. Do you feel like that's still the case? And if so, what would you say to people that have type 1 diabetes that might open their minds to a different way of thinking about this?
There's two things there. It's that, like you had said, we need to be able to trust our healthcare providers, but they have also got to re-up on what they've learned. They've got to look at the plant-based research. They've got to understand what insulin resistance is and how insulin resistance is created and caused and actually worsened by the diet that has been recommended to people for diabetes for 100 years now. Since the discovery of insulin, we have been treated with the attitude that carbohydrates are the problem. Carbohydrates have never been the problem. There's a much bigger picture to this. It's never just about the food, also stress and lack of sleep and lack of movement, right? There's so much more to this puzzle than just always saying that carbohydrates are the problem. So we do need our leaders in diabetes education to acknowledge that this research is serious, it's effective, and it can change people's lives. And if they're looking at their patients and knowing, gosh, my patients are just struggling, the next thing isn't, they got low carb, they're doing something wrong. Patients get blamed a lot for this kind of thing. And it's sometimes we're just too close to see the problem. I think we get used to the space that we're in. We get used to teaching the same thing all the time. There isn't enough follow-up and getting to know our patients on like a heart-connected kind of a level. And we completely understand that, right? I mean, the 15-minute appointment, it is hard on clinicians right now. It is hard to change. Even if they want it, it requires change. It requires an adjustment and looking at it and going, I really want better for my patients. How can I help support them in this? Now, also, it is on us It is really on us as people with diabetes to say to our doctors, I don't think something's working. I'm not a diabetes expert, but something's not working, doc. I need you to help me understand my options. So something I really help coach people with diabetes through, type 1 or type 2, even LADA, MODY, you know, there's multiple types of diabetes these days, is I help to coach them on questions to ask their doctors so they can get to the root of what they really want solved. You know, using words like, I'm struggling, or I'm feeling this, or I'm stressed, or this is really upsetting me, or I don't understand what this means. And these are important questions for all people that have a health concern to be able to say to their doctor, hey, doc, I really want to learn this. And I think a lot of doctors actually get pretty excited when they have proactive patients. When the patients come to them and they say, hey, I got bullet points for you today, doctor. I have got bullet points for you. I think a doctor will go, whoa, okay, what are we talking about? Let's get doc talk shop. Let's get down to business. So just walking into our appointments and just kind of sitting there, or just kind of letting or expecting the doctor to just talk at us, you know, like clipboard forward versus eye contact. We as people that are the primary decision makers in our health need to kind of help a doctor out, help a nurse practitioner out, you know, help our leaders and knowledge out so that they know that we want more. That is a huge thing that's missing. And also, I really want people with type 2 diabetes to know that there's more out there than just medication. There are more options than just to be medicated and forget about it. It is so important to develop the attitude that so much of your life is actually in your hands and that medication is not a cure. You know, if we did have a cure for type 1 diabetes, we can't just stop caring about our bodies. That's just not how it works. No matter what the condition is, lifestyle is always underneath the diagnosis. It's always a solution to probably a substantial portion of that problem. I'm an example of that. And people with type 2 diabetes, or actually pre-diabetes, are really fantastic examples of that because, you know, they're chasing this A1C of like 5.9, 6%, and they're super frustrated with it. Little shifts in their lifestyle choices can completely reduce this resistance to the point where they go back to their doctor with an A1C of 5.4% and they're no longer being threatened with metformin. You know, they're winning at life. So this is the stuff to be able to own as people, to say, I want more from my experience with my doctor. And you get to ask about that. We will help to elevate the entire practice if we have a better attitude about owning our health.
Yeah. And it can be scary at the beginning, especially like you said, if you're a young person or even if you're an older person and you just got diagnosed and you don't understand, it's confusing and intimidating. But I think it really is important to have that ownership and to feel empowered, especially if you're motivated to change and optimize your lifestyle. Because like we were talking about earlier, it's lifestyle medicine, right? Like it's not just about the food. It's not just about your blood sugar. It's about how you're feeling. And there's so many things that can help you feel good, from the exercise to the appropriate sleep, to the stress management techniques, to love and connection. All of those pillars are so important. Well, let's talk a little bit more. Obviously fiber, but can you explain to those people that don't understand, how does a whole food plant-based diet benefit people with type 1 diabetes?
To oversimplify it, which is something I really like to do with how we can get into insulin resistance, is I think of fiber as this tool that clears the traffic. Nobody likes traffic. People that have driven on the highway, you get blocked up, you get stopped and stuff, and you're frustrated and you're trying to get from point A to point B. Well, fiber has some features of it that help to clear the passage, help to move things out of the way. And if there's less traffic, our entire body gets to move a little faster. You can picture it. Traffic is moving. Okay, there's less traffic on the highway. Well, what can happen here is what we eat now breaks down to glucose. Well, those little glucose molecules can move a little more efficiently because insulin comes into the mix and can help that glucose move to the cell so much more efficiently, getting it from point A to point B a little bit quicker. So if we're eating fiber, it helps to digest things a little bit more slower as we're eating, slow down the absorption rate of the carbohydrate in itself. We buy insulin time to do its job. We buy it time. If we're eating, white refined sugar, we're eating donuts for breakfast and we're washing it down with a glass of milk. Something that people should know is that most pastries are actually half fat. We're calling them carbohydrates, but they're half loaded with oil and butter and egg and, you know, fat sources. So blood sugar might jack up really, really quickly because we're absorbing that sugar so fast that our insulin barely has enough time to do its work. Well, then fat swoops in and holds that high, holds it there. I call it hang time. So that's where one of the frustrations that we see in type 1 diabetes is hang time. Blood sugar stays high. We blame carbohydrates for this. But if we're not eating the carbohydrates, we're eating fat and protein, and usually it's in the sources of meat and cheese. The high-fat foods instead of the high-fiber foods are what perpetuate insulin resistance, even in type 1 diabetes. And one really extreme example of this, well, proof of the insulin resistance present in someone with type 1, is that you go to your doctor, you show them the records, you know, they're looking at your CGM, they're looking at your data, and they see that, boy, the insulin's just doesn't seem like you're getting enough. It looks like you need more insulin. This was my whole life. Every time I went in, it was more insulin, more insulin, more insulin. It was never maybe the nutrition is the problem. Keep doing, you know, what I'm telling you to do with the low carbohydrates, where the attitude that meat and cheese were quote unquote free foods as if they didn't raise your blood sugar. Meanwhile, you're taking in all this fat, all this protein, which can perpetuate insulin resistance. Is you go in and because of all this additional insulin, you're insulin to carb ratio changes. And what this means is you've got to take one unit of insulin for a certain number of grams of carbohydrate. Now, let's say kind of 1 to 15 is pretty common for somebody for lunch. Well, all of a sudden, that comes down to 1 to 12, 10, 8, 5. All of a sudden, you're working with an insulin to carb ratio of one unit per every 5 grams. That is insulin resistance. There's something going on there because your body needs a whole heck of a lot more carbohydrates just to function than what you're going to be willing to do because you're taking so much insulin for just 5 grams or 5 grams of carbs. It's a lot of insulin to meet someone's carbohydrate needs. This is where the person with diabetes is not treated like a human. They're completely treated like, oh, this is just about insulin. No, this is evidence of insulin resistance. This is a conversation about your high-fat diet causing resistance, which can then lead into other health problems. So we don't bring up insulin resistance enough in the clinic, and we don't talk about fiber like it's the solution. We talk about carbs like it's the problem. Meanwhile, that low-carb diet has gotten us into a significant healthcare problem in the U.S.
Absolutely. I feel like it's so misunderstood because I feel like that's still what my patients are being told, like meat and cheese is fine, you know, and everybody's still afraid of eating anything like beans. I taught a Food for Life class where I had one patient with diabetes walk out because he said I was saying everything opposite of what he had been taught before. So
right?
He decided it was too much cognitive dissonance. He couldn't take it anymore. So he walked out. So I think it is hard because it's ingrained into your brain that carbs are bad, carbs are bad, carbs are bad. And you're looking at all these beautiful whole plant foods. And yes, the grams of carbohydrate in them are high, but they also come with fiber. They also come with antioxidants. I mean, you can't judge it the same, which is why I think that what you're saying is so correct. And that when we demonize carbohydrates, it creates a lot of confusion and ends up causing more problems than benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other side of, I mean, like this double-edged low carb sword is that I worked with a young athlete he was amazing. He had the maturity to say, I've been on this low carb diet. He'd only had type 1 diabetes for a couple years, been on this low carb diet because that was initially advised. And his A1C was quite good. His glucose averages were quite good, but he had a family history of heart disease. And he was really concerned about this going forward because he'd at least done enough research to know that the way that I'm eating and the amount of meat that I'm eating and how low carb I am, I'm not so sure this is great for my health. Actually, my heart as I age. I was so impressed with how he put this together at his age. And we talked a little bit about that. And when I found out what his insulin to carb ratio was, it was really low, really low, you know, in that 1 to 5 kind of area, less than 1 to 10. And when he started to put that together with there's actually some insulin resistance present for you, even though your glucose control looks pretty good by the numbers. The more we live by the numbers, the more we miss. And living by the numbers is one of those spaces in our head that isn't the safest. It's not the kindest. Our self-talk isn't awesome when we live by the numbers, although we still do need to. We do have to develop a more positive mindset around that. But that's where it's like, oh, wait a minute, but I'm low carb and my numbers are awesome. Well, there's much more to us than just diabetes. There's much more going on with our brain health. If we want to prevent cancers to the best of our ability, we want to prevent cognitive decline, which was also, as I started to learn more about plant-based, it made it that much more worth it. Because if you ever watch someone suffer and die from cognitive decline, dementia, or Alzheimer's, and you find out that plant-based nutrition is such an incredible, powerful tool for prevention, you will go for it. That is not something I'm going to play with. I'm not going to play with my brain. And in fact, an endocrinologist that I worked with who I really, really love, we were talking about high-fat diets at one point, and all she said was, don't mess with your brain. Why would you mess with your brain? And I just remembered that. I was like, that's the line of a lifetime when it comes to high-fat diets. Don't mess with your brain. And I remembered that one my whole professional career.
Yeah, I think dementia is a lot of people's number one fear. And as we get this epidemic of cardiovascular disease, we're absolutely going to be seeing more dementia because they're related, right? The metabolic health issue. And so we're going to have a lot more examples of what a lot of us would prefer to avoid as we get older. We want to stay sharper. So what would be your recommendations for people with type 1 diabetes that want to transition to and adopt a plant-based diet? Because if they do have insulin resistance, which a lot of them might, if they are eating more low-carb lifestyle, it can be tricky at the beginning, right?
Based on some of the things I've mentioned in my experiences, I hope that they've kept some bullet points here for the reasons that I had and the positive outcomes that came to me as a result of this. Because if these are things that you want, you already have your goals in mind. You already have like, wait, this is different from what I've been doing, and I want my health to go in this direction. And one very point blank question is, if you're eating low carb, how's that going for you? Because if your health isn't going great, there's a really good chance that your nutrition is what needs to be targeted for you to reach that level of health that you're looking for, especially if you're an athlete, especially if you're, and I'm not talking about competitive, you don't have to be a competitive athlete. You can be someone that, you know, works out 3 times a week and loves it. That is a routine. That is a practice. I call that person an athlete. You know, athlete is a word that everyone gets to use if they're active. That's the beautiful part about it. So for someone transitioning, certainly, it is take inventory of your kitchen and look for the foods that are plant-based high-fiber foods in 4 categories. And it's the obvious ones. It's the veggies and the fruit and the beans and the whole grains. Take inventory of the foods that you already enjoy and also notice which ones are these high in fiber, because you'll get impressed after a while and you might have to do some Googling. You might have to look up some things. How much fiber is in an eggplant? You know, we don't always know these things off the top of our head, but you might feel really surprised as to how many great foods you already like. So it's about addition first, addition rather than subtraction for so many people. Start adding more of the high fiber before you take everything away that could not only be a shock to you, but a shock to anyone else sharing your kitchen. So you gradually start to choose less animal sources of protein and more plant-based sources of protein. And this is kind of a loaded statement because all plants have protein. All of them do. And they do have all of the essential amino acids in varying amounts. So the wider variety of plants that we eat, the more vitamins and minerals we're going to get. We're also going to fulfill our protein needs by eating enough calories. So this is kind of where the work comes in. You know, someone like me that helps to show somebody what that looks like in my work is that we do need to kind of have more evidence that we're getting our fill of plant foods. But where we start is with the foods that we like. And then we find out where the fiber is. And then we find out where the protein is. And then we find out that our energy level is rocking. Physically, we can feel that the plant-based nutrition is working. And if it seems like something's off, that's where a dietitian starts to ask questions.
I love that because I'm all for the addition strategy. But what you're saying is as you start adding those, you're targeting that insulin resistance. So your body's learning how to be more sensitive to insulin. And maybe over time, if you'd like to start pulling away some of those animal products, you can do that slowly.
Exactly. Another thing for people who take insulin to know, to make note of, and do not forget, is that you become more insulin sensitive quite quickly with plant-based nutrition. It's almost like the further you're moving from, if your diet is drastically different than plant-based nutrition, that's another reason to go slow, is because if you start becoming insulin sensitive within 48 hours, you need less insulin, you are probably going to have a low blood sugar. So it's a pretty good idea to already have a conversation with your healthcare team just to say, I'm doing this. I'm going to call you guys if I need help. A lot of people type 1 are very capable of making their own adjustments with insulin because we have to be. We have to be able to understand this. However, technology is pretty fancy these days. And a lot of times with pumps and CGMs, a doctor will set up a pump based on basal rates and bolus rates, and everything's automatic or automated depending on the pump. And I'm finding out that people type 1, they don't even know their own settings in that pump. So I'd highly encourage you to understand your own settings in your pump, know how to make adjustments, know what it means, but have a conversation with your team first, because you want them along for this experience, especially if you nail it, because you're now their teacher. You are now, you know, I don't know, patient 1 to show them the plant-based nutrition is awesome. I hope you tell all your patients about this. This rocks. And this is evidence-based. So here's your case study. That's kind of a great way to look at it.
Yeah. It's like they become ambassadors.
Yes.
Ambassadors for this, and are able to show an example of how you can do it and feel good in the process and eat delicious, amazing, yummy food, which is the very best part, right?
The eating part. Yeah.
There's no suffering in the eating part. Okay, before we get to the wrap-up questions, if you could just give us maybe 2 or 3 tips. There are quite a few healthcare providers that listen to this podcast. So I'd love if you can give us some tips that healthcare providers, what can we do to improve the experience for people with type 1 diabetes?
You know, I'm going to plug my book and say read my book with an open mind. You know, read it with an open mind and realize that age-old nutrition recommendations are part of the problem right now. They're part of the problem. And the reason why I'm saying read my book is because it's from the patient perspective. I really want you to walk in my shoes. I really want healthcare providers to walk in my shoes. And when I work with people that have diabetes, that's the first thing I say to them is, I need to walk in your shoes. Help me do that. They help me do that through showing them, when they show me their glucose data, when they tell me what their struggles are. That is serious empathy. That's a movement towards understanding people that you don't live with. Very important to do that. And it doesn't suck up a lot of time. The other one, and kind of a serious note, is to please stop calling us diabetics or people with diabetes. And I know it takes more time to say that, but you could just call me Lauren. You can just call John. When someone's diagnosed, you're diabetic is not ideal as the first thing that someone hears when they find out that they have a disease that's going to require a lot of work. It's, hey, we're looking at diabetes here and we're going to learn as much as possible. I'm with you on this road. Sometimes glucose management can be oversimplified as just count your carbs and take your insulin. One big one I hear too much is just go low carb, lose weight. You know, it can be really just a knife in the heart sometimes when people have been possibly struggling with their health for decades. And then they're hit with this, oh my God, I'm going to have to change everything overnight. A lot of all or nothing thinking in diabetes, by the way. There's so much all or nothing thinking. So we want to provide a really safe space for mistakes. We want to provide a safe space for success, for oopses, for failures and achievements. You know, we have this space for that so that we accept both of them kind of like with open arms. So insulin resistance, as I've mentioned, it's a frequent problem for people with type 1 diabetes, and doctors that talk about it are like paving a trail. They really are in their clinics. This is unique to talk about insulin resistance. It's very unique to actually teach people with diabetes what insulin resistance is. I love teaching classes like this at a community center. I've been able to really watch people learn in new ways. And it's information that just hasn't been accessible. We can now make this accessible. And I think the last thing I'll say is technology does not necessarily make life easier. But technology is a responsibility. It's a big responsibility, and it's not always accurate. It's actually allowed to not be 100% accurate. So the technology is awesome. There are so many apps out there. There's just so many options. That in itself can be super, super overwhelming. It can be really hard for someone with type 1 diabetes to have gone through all the hoops with insurance, all the hoops of getting the product, learning how to use it. I mean, think for a second here how like, and I'm just going to throw this out, like socioeconomic and educational barriers. It is so incredibly unfair out there for people with type 1 diabetes to get access to tech. It's BS that everyone does not have access to this. This is something that really gets me ticked off because no matter where you live, how old you were when you were diagnosed, who your parents are, we all have different experiences in life with our educational needs and who inspired us. The fact that I got a kid 10 minutes across the street, you know, 10 minutes down the street from me who had different parents, can't get access to a CGM. Or doesn't understand it. It's so unfair. And that should not be happening, period. Again, you know, that's the systemic problem. But if doctors could do any extra thing to help a patient get access, please take that step. Inspire your team. I mean, I've like had messages with nurses that are just like bend over backwards. They will be so helpful when you call into your clinic and you ask for something. So helping your patients understand stuff, helping them understand what you're saying is also incredibly important too. But the tech isn't going to save our lives unless we know how to use it properly. That's a huge piece of this is diabetes never stops being a responsibility.
Yeah. Oh, those are so good. Thank you so much for that. There's obviously very complex on many levels, but I think that that can help a lot of providers get started on the right path. Okay. So now let's move on to the wrap-up questions. The first one is, what do you wish more people knew? This could be about anything. What do you wish more people knew?
Okay. If I could rub like a magic lamp, I'm already rubbing, right? I was thinking about this a few weeks ago. If I could gift everyone I work with this kind of magic lamp wish, it was that they would be able to wake up tomorrow with having achieved their health goals. They will wake up tomorrow in the state of health that they imagine is like, quote unquote, perfect. They're in the state that they want to be in that they're telling me is ideal. So if you want to lose weight to a certain number, or if you want your glucose to be at a certain, your A1C to be at a certain percentage, I want for everyone to get 24 hours in that body. You get 24 hours, says my lamp, and then you're going to wake up like Cinderella and you're going to be back to where you are today. I want to gift everyone 24 hours in what they think is perfection, where they're going to be. And then we're going to talk about what you had to do to get there. Now you know you were in that body. How did you think? How did you feel? What was the transformation that spoke to you? And now we've got it. Now we've got somewhere to go. That gave hope. That gave everyone could understand, like, I got there. I can do this. I lived in that body for a day. I want it back. And I think that people would realize that so much is mental in that perfect state. You know, for all health seekers to know that to lose weight, it's going to take thinking like this. And maybe some people realize it wasn't about the numbers. It was about loving myself. It would be just so profound to gift everyone that. And then I don't think anyone would say, boy, the six different medications I'm taking got me there. They are all going to find out that it was lifestyle, that it was mental, that they needed hope, that they needed self-talk to change, that they needed to love themselves, they needed a support system. You know, we're kind of going through all the blue zones right now, but like, you know, like that is what someone's going to find out if they got 24 hours exactly where they wanted to be.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I love that thought experiment because you could even imagine that now, you know, and then put your plan into place. What am I willing to do to get there? And it does. It takes that deliberate effort and consistency. But I think having that vision in your mind, that's the anchor that pulls you towards it. You know, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
How do you define success in this lifetime?
Oh, that's a really hard question. Mostly because, you know where my mind goes? Here, hard questions, I want to throw sarcasm at them right away. Just my deflection skill, right? I think I've been like really feeling like strong woman empowerment lately. Like I've just kind of been in that space. And my gut reaction to this is that success is actually feeling safe to express yourself in mind and body. Feeling safe to express yourself in your mind and in your body. Because when you're there, you can do. You can probably do more than you thought you could. But when people don't feel like they're accepted in their environment or they're not connecting, being successful is, it takes on a different meaning. It takes on something you feel like you can never touch it. It's like a star in the sky. You can see it, but I can't reach it. So if you feel like your environment is conducive, you feel safe there. I can express myself. I can wear whatever I want. I can be who I want. I can be more positive in that state of mind, then, oh my God, like success has new definitions. It's a totally different thing. You know, you've done the Ironman. When you're done, are you done? You know, do you want a bigger dream though? Is there like another thing behind it? You cross the line, you know, you've seen the tape. Like once you get to that awesome space, you've achieved something huge. I bet you're not like done. Like it's a new dream now. It's like a new thing that you're reaching for. So feeling like you have that space to train like you did, like I'm going to achieve this, like I want this. If people can get that and they feel safe in that space, there will be more. Yeah.
No, I think you're onto something because it reminds me of, you know, that book of the wishes of the dying, or what is it called? The one where the lady interviewed all the people that were dying and the things that they would change. And one of the big themes was that they said they wish they could live according to who they really were. So many people don't. I suspect the majority of humans don't. We live according to rules of society. We live according to what our parents want us to do. We live according to what we think other people want. Sometimes we're completely even wrong about that because sometimes people aren't even thinking anything about us. We're just putting it on ourselves, right? So I think you're so correct in that if we were able to just let go and have that freedom to be who we truly want to be and explore and try different things out and not worry about judgment or worry about the shoulds, then I think there would be so many more joyful people accomplishing their dreams of anything. Like some would be, you know, billionaire moguls, but some people would be in the cabin in the woods next to a pond, you know, reading every day. You know, everybody has different desires and those can even change over a lifetime. You know, like I've definitely been through different phases. Right now I'm in my athlete era, you know, but I don't think that's going to be forever, you know? So yeah, I love that. I think you hit the nail on the head with that one for sure.
Oh, yay.
Okay. So I know this one, you said you're not sure what you're going to say for this one. So now I'm curious. So is there a goal or a dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
I've never had a bucket list. I've never made a bucket list. And if I'm really missing out, like most people have done this, here's a deep thing I'll say about it, that there's a reason. I did not think that I would reach the age that I am today. When I graduated high school, I did not think 40 would happen. Oh, no. So it's it's kind of a new idea for me to think ahead, to think beyond. I remember really evading, like really avoiding that. What's your 5-year plan, you know, in career classes, like really avoiding that. Like what? I'm just trying to get from blood sugar to blood sugar. Like I'm just trying to get from meal to meal. Thanks. Those were my priorities. And once I came into the plant-based world and it was feeding me, this energy, it was feeding me life, it was giving me life. I took off as fast as I could. It was like dietitian, diabetes education specialist, indoor cycling instructor, you know, in between. I moved as fast as I could. And I think that there are wishes and moments in time in that fast movement that I wish I had done things a little bit differently, like in building relationships, because I was so full steam ahead and I was still dealing with the anger of growing up in the clinic and I wasn't flashing love to everybody around me when I, you know, walked into a lot of those spaces. But I've learned so much since I started doing more public speaking. And I think that's what's allowed me to dream a little bigger. I tend to gravitate into, you know, very opposite of diabetes is just travel, like things all over the place that I want to see just because it's hard for me to get outside of having diabetes because I work in it and I live it. and to imagine like the things that I was afraid of were like travel, like being outside my environment. I actually love history. I'm a huge history nerd, like ancient history. I mean, you like, you know, kick a rock in Scotland and all this history comes up. You know, if you ever listen to podcasts about Scotland or Ireland or just the UK, and I mean, there's so much amazing stuff to experience in history. And I think part of it is that I've learned a lot from it. Something that we as people would really probably benefit from is learning from the past so that we can improve in the current and in the present. There's somewhere we get lost on lessons in the past, and I really gravitate into some of those stories. So it's very silly. People probably travel, they've done all the things, they've gone to all the places. I've been too busy having diabetes to enjoy life. So I think that maybe what's on bucket list is actually very simple for me. It's just to enjoy going forward, relax a little bit. I did teach indoor cycling classes in Costa Rica a few years ago. I would love to be known as an international spin instructor. That would be super badass. Wow. That would be super badass.
I love that.
I've done it once. I mean, anybody, please, UK, call me. I'll come and teach.
That's amazing. I love that.
I get to be a DJ on a bike.
International spin instructor up for hire. So
yes, I get to be a DJ on a bike and I love it. I love it.
That's great. Well, I love that dream. I hope you achieve it. And I can't wait to see all the places that you go.
Thank you.
What does it mean to be human?
I thought through this one. You know what came to mind is that life is one big growing pain. So just get used to it. Expanding. Okay. With growth comes change. Be adaptable and welcoming to it. Change is going to happen whether we like it or not, right? They can be things that we want happening, like we're looking for a relationship or a new job or kids happen. You know, the welcoming things, we adapt, we change with that. But sometimes we really like resist and fight the changes that we need. So human, you know, we struggle when we choose to stay where we are, even if it's not something we actually want. And our brain was designed to resist perceived fear and risk, even if it's the best thing for us. Like we avoid these things that will expand us. You know, being human is constantly resisting these things, you know, this growing pain, and we need to embrace it. You know, we seem to be wired to find out the hard way, but we make it through. I've never done anything right the first time. I had to go to like 5 different colleges, you know, to like get it right. And that was me. And I think I was so resistant. And I also was so down on myself about what I was capable of. Like, oh, I can't be a science major. Oh, you know, like, remember in 8th grade, like science, gross. You know, like I didn't think I was capable. But I had lived a life in reverse. I had lived a life in the clinic. Then I got out. Then I had to figure out who I was. Then I found out, wait a minute, I learned all this stuff in the clinic as like from the nutrition professionals. I might actually be able to be one and then become an educator and all the things. So human is just, I don't know, one big whoops after the next. Pick yourself up. Keep going. Nobody got good at anything by taking it easy. It's not supposed to be easy. For so many sports fans out there, I think that would speak to them. If you've been watching like the Copa or the, you know, the soccer games that have been on or the football games that are on, wherever you're listening, I mean, come on. If you're like a soccer fan, you can imagine. I mean, this is like such a hard sport. Like if you've been watching this, you can see this huge accomplishment, or you're watching the Tour de France right now. It is not easy to be great, but it's also not easy to be a dietitian. It's not easy to go to school. It's not easy to like do any of these things that are a dream. So embrace change, roll with it, and, you know, just get after it.
I love it. I love it. I think that's what we're here for. I mean, I think life would be boring without a challenge. I mean, what would we do? It's just, you know, so I think that's part of why we're here. I think we actually deep down in our souls enjoy that challenge. Because like you said, it does help us grow. I have on my wall here, discomfort is the catalyst for growth. And that applies to so many things, because just think about our muscles, right? Our muscles getting bigger, our bones. Yeah. Bones need stress to get stronger. And, you know, it's a lot of things in life. So
bodies love to work and That's what our mind was designed for. And we haven't even explored every corner of our mind. I often think about that in a body in motion. Our heart loves to work. And that doesn't mean it wants to work through soda and hot dogs. The body wants to be pumped. It wants to pump on oxygen. It wants to be worked. It wants our heart rate to go up. It wants us to move around and some muscle, and the rest of our body benefits from that type of work. Getting out of my own way and getting into the headspace of what health is in a different light had really helped me, and kind of explaining to myself, why do I like spin class? My riders think I'm crazy. They ask me, what did you eat today? Have you been drinking coffee again? You know, with the caffeinated kind. Don't. You know, they have fun with me in this way. And I realize, God, there really is something to this food. You know, this really does work. And it brings me back to why I started this 16 years ago, and keep it going. That.
Yeah, they're like getting there hoping they get an easy class that day. And they're like, oh no. She's got too much energy today. What's going on?
Yeah, never. Yeah, and I'm taking a vacation, so I'll be out for a week. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to make these next two classes memorable for you guys, right?
Y'all are going to be sore until I get back.
You're not going to forget this. It. Yeah, and then
Lauren, they get mad
when I'm gone. Then they get mad when I'm gone. So it's love. It's love.
It's an addiction, you know? Lauren, this has been fantastic. You have so much wisdom and empathy and compassion and just so much to share with my listeners. So I really appreciate you taking the time. So if you could just please tell us where we can connect with you, where we can find your book, if you offer any services, I would love for you to share that with my audience, please.
Thank you so much for having me. It's fun. It's great to talk to you because you love this same subject matter that I love so much. And yes, people can, you know, Googling me, you're going to find things that I've written, just Lauren Plunkett. You're going to see things that I've written in different places, but also laurenplunkett.com, which is pretty standard, you know, pretty easy. It's going to take you straight to where I do have some services that you can work with me. My book is on there. You can get it straight off of my website. It is listed on Amazon, but hey, I'd love if you just went to my website and checked it out and you can really see who I am. The first thing that you'll see on my website is the phrase, healthy is your adjective. And it's, yeah, right. It's a belief system to see yourself differently if things aren't going exactly the way that you want it to. And you can read more about who I am on there. You can follow me at Lauren Plunkett Health. Also, if you're into continuous glucose monitoring, I do some videos on CGM. It really is kind of my thing. And the analysis of glucose is never easy, and it always helps to have another pair of eyes to find out your patterns and to help you work through nutrition. Because when we do understand our glucose at that point, man, can it be just, I mean, first of all, for the athletes I work with, it can be killer. It's really fun to watch people take it and run with it. So yeah, I love Great. A message. I love a positive message. So for folks that are listening, yeah. Let me know you're out there.
Awesome. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for everything, for writing such a fabulous book, and for just sharing your experience with us, and just taking the time to really learn about yourself so that you can help others learn about themselves, because that's so important. I really appreciate you, and I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Yami. My name is Lauren Plunkett, and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions, and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.